Fans, nice to have you back with us on this Saturday night. Don't forget about Original Joe's. They are now open for takeout or grab and go in North Beach, as well as Original Joe's out in Westlake. So if it's that frozen ravioli or something off the menu, absolutely give them a call. Check them out at originaljoes.com. And phone number out there, 650-755-7400 from 11 a.m. to 9. And in San Francisco, 415-775-4877. So John Dugan and the family, we thank everyone for their support. And Original Joe's, grab and go, take out. I know our good friend Rich Lieberman went up there and got a hamburger after listening to us last Saturday night. Sunday, he was at the takeout window at Original Joe's in North Beach. So, all right, joining us, Mark Simon. Mark A. Simon says on Twitter, Sports Info Solutions. Mark, great to have you with us. How are you? How's your week going?
It's going all right. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be joining you from very nice weather the last couple of days, at least, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Very good. Now, during as I talk about your podcast, which I think are terrific, you had Ron Washington on this week. How'd you like having Wash on? He's an original, isn't he?
Yeah. So the intention there was to get a defensive guru. If you're watching the Last Dance documentary for basketball, like Tex Winner for basketball, I wanted to get someone that was like the authority. And there were a couple of potential people, but I was glad that I landed on Wash, who was very talkative and who is, had some fun stories. I enjoyed him talking about his time as a minor league catcher in particular. We spent most of the conversation talking about defense and working with different players like Eric Chavez and Ozzie Albies and all the different things he tries to impart to them.
No, I saw what he did with the A's. He created Gold Glovers out of Chavez and Tejada, Mark Ellis. He made Giambi a first baseman as well. And I've seen things he's done with Swanson. So Wash is absolutely terrific. I enjoy talking baseball with him all the time. Hey, this week, you know, I love watching the games on MLB. You know, you just turn one on and all of a sudden you're watching, you know, an epic moment. And I got to watch two, and I said, boy, this is perfect for Mark because we've done this the last few weeks, and you've come up with such interesting insights into some of the better and perfect games that we've talked about. And so let's talk a little David Cohn and David mm-hmm. Wells of the Yankees. And, of course, David Cohn pitched his perfect game on the day that Yogi Berra was honored at Yankee Stadium with Don Larson there as well. So, in fact, Don Larson said he never stays for the whole game. For that game, he had to stay for the whole game. So let's talk David Cohn and David Wells. Let's get your insight on that.
Sure. David Cohn's was, a fairly easy one as perfect games go. He threw only 88 pitches, which at least among the perfect games that we have pitch count data for, it's the fewest. Jim Bunning's was 89, so he beats it out by one pitch. The thing that I know from watching that one, and I watched both of these, the slider that David Cohn threw, David Cohn used to throw like a slurve kind of slider that really had a lot of bite to break away from a right-handed hitter and in on a left-handed hitter. That day, he got a lot of chases. We didn't keep exact stats on things like that then, but it was definitely one of his better days. The other thing that I think is interesting is he survived a 33-minute rain delay. Some managers might hook a pitcher off a rain delay, but 33 minutes, they kept him in. There was one really good defensive play. Paul O'Neill made it early. Pretty much cruised. That was one of the more dominant. It wasn't like a 17 strikeout perfect game, but that was a pretty dominant perfect game for its time, especially in that era when offense was so strong.
Yeah, I saw the Paul O'Neill catch. I watched that in right center field. He dove for it and did a somersault and held on to the ball. It was a good catch.
Yep.
Go ahead.
And I want to talk about the other one. So the thing about David Wells' perfect game. So Tim McClelland had the plate that day. And Tim McClelland is widely considered, when he was umpiring, to have been the best umpire in baseball behind the plate. But the entire game, he gave David Wells an inch just like an extra inch off the outside corner. And there were a couple of times that Wells got strikes that he shouldn't have gotten, including one on a 3-2 pitch that Jorge Posada did a major frame job on that should have been ball four in the third inning. But he got the call, and then he kept it going from there. 120 pitches on that one. He went to the same high school as Don Larson. That's kind of the punchline on that one. An impressive performance for sure for David Wells that day.
I think if I'm remembering correctly, was it Paul Molitor who was up? And I'm in my mind, it looked like ball four.
There were two of them. Paul Molitor and Javier Valentin both had situations where they probably should have gotten ball four in the day.
Yeah, but he did squeeze him. You're so right about that, McClellan, and watching him. Boy, that he did not give him an inch. But an amazing job for David Wells. What about swings and misses? Did we talk about that? Because I really, from the Dallas Braden discussion a couple of weeks ago, that one really stuck with me, that he got four or five swings and misses the whole game. What about these guys?
Yeah, these were not, I don't think these were upper echelon for that. I don't have the number in front of me, but I know that it was like upper echelon. You would think of, like, we were talking about the Lincecum game. I think we had him for like 30 in that game. And I want to say that they were in the teens for this one. So it was kind of like a good, David Cone was better because he had the 11 strikeouts. But they weren't like, they weren't Braden, but at the same time, like, they weren't Lincecum either. They were good. They were good no hitters, good perfect games. Cone, I don't know that the lineup necessarily that the Expos put out was one particularly damaging to Cone, but if you throw one, that's pretty good. It's one of the most impossible feats in sports. Certainly give them a lot of credit for that.
That was great. You always give good insight into it, and I got to see some of both of those this week, and the slurve or slider of Cone must have broken 2 feet, and and it was such a – I mean, these are major league hitters, and they're swinging over the pitch by a foot, you know, so you can imagine that late break. You know, these are big league hitters, so that was interesting.
Cone had 18. Cone had 18 missed swings, which is a good total. It's not like he was more efficient than anything else in this game.
Yeah, well, my thought was he got it when he needed it. When he needed a big swing and miss, he got it to put people away, and that was what I saw. So, all right, always interesting to get your insight into some of these. Well,
the Expos lineup was good that day too. Sorry about that. I just wanted with Pat and Rondell White, maybe not as good as some others. You might ask me about another game in a second. The Expos lineup was, again, good, not superlative, certainly.
All right, go ahead. Bring up the next game. I'll let you do it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Dwight Gooden's no-hitter was, I think, the third one on the master list.
Very exciting moment for Gooden coming back to the Yankees. Only his third or fourth start as a Yankee, I think.
Yeah, 134 pitches. It was like 5-6 starts, as you're saying, into his Yankee career. He walked 6. So this was not the Dwight Gooden of 1984, 85, 86. He walked a lot of guys that year. He had a start where he walked 7 and another where he walked 8. That's the game with the big defensive play by Gerald Williams against Alex Rodriguez in the first inning. The most impressive thing about this one to me is the lineup. That was the Mariner team that had A-Rod, Griffey, and Edgar Martinez. And there aren't many games where you're going to hold all three of those guys hitless in the same game. That happened to be one. That was kind of a storybook kind of game. His father was having heart surgery the next day. It was nice for Dwight Gooden to have one last great moment after a career that, boy, he some of it was self-inflicted, certainly, but he went through a lot in his career, and it was good for him to have that last moment. There was a Knick playoff game on, and I remember flipping off the Knick playoff game to catch the end of it.
Well, the curveball was his pitch. I mean, you know, obviously 84, 85, and coming up from the Southern League. I forgot which league he was in. He was just
the Eastern League. Yep.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
Carolina League.
Carolina League.
Class A.
Yep. Unbelievable. But what about in this game? Did he have the big curveball?
I don't know that he had. This was not the vintage Dwight. He had only 10 missed swings, and you would think that, like, he was a power pitcher at that time. He'd have gotten, like, 20-ish. I was reading a story that had, like, the Joe Girardi perspective on the game, and he said that the fastball, like, got a lot better after the first inning or two, and that was kind of what carried him through it. And, again, against a very tough lineup, when you look at the history of no-hitters, there aren't many no-hitters where you're going to have to go through a lineup like A-Rod, Griffey, and Edgar. That's basically, and A-Rod's not, but that's basically three Hall of Fame players.
Ah, great job. Three games worth watching. And in this pandemic where we're not seeing live baseball in the Korean baseball, it was fun to see these three. And I like the announcing in the games as well. It was fun. I'm going to throw you a curveball here as we wrap it up with Mark A. Simon. It says on Twitter, Mark Simon of Sports Info Solutions. Ever look up anything on Bob Watson, the Bull, who was the Yankee general manager in the mid-90s, had to deal with Steinbrenner, had to make a special door for him to get into the clubhouse and all sorts of stuff. But I remember him with the Houston Astros hitting in that ballpark, which was, you know, it was just impossible to hit down there in the Astrodome. And he was a hard hitter, scored the millionth run in baseball. Did you ever look up Bob Watson at all, anything on him?
Yeah, I've got it right in front of me, actually. Thank you for asking. Bob Watson from 1972 to 1976 was a high-end hitter in the National League. If you look at the slash line for that time, he hit .312 over those 5 years. He was not a guy who was going to hit a lot of home runs because he was playing in that park, but he averaged about 15 a year. The walk and strikeout totals were similar. The baseball stat that people like to talk about now is OPS plus, which is like, what was your OPS compared to what the league OPS was, and then we can adjust it if you were in a ballpark that wasn't favorable to you. And in fact, you can even go a few extra years. You can go like 72 to 78. His OPS plus is 139. In current terms, that's a guy who's probably hitting 30 home runs a year. And he was hitting like 18, 17. If you're a 139, you're a pretty good hitter. And for a period of time, looks like about 7 years, he was one of the premier guys. And even at the end, by the end of his career, his offensive numbers still hold up pretty well. He's one of those guys that if he had been playing in a more offense-friendly park, probably would have been more recognized and would have gotten more more Hall of Fame support and things of that sort. But he was a good player. He might not have been a superstar, but he was close.
Superstar guy passed away this week, the Bull, Bob Watson. I enjoyed having him on the show. Yeah, I enjoyed having him on the show, and he was a tough guy. I could just imagine what he was. And you always do, you always come up with that number that puts it in perspective, and that OPS plus puts it in perspective for me, because I knew he could hit. But now it gives me a little different view of him. Mark, thank you so much, as always. You do a great job. I appreciate it. And we'll follow you on Twitter and your podcast and everything else. You do a good job during the week.
Thank you.
All right. That is Mark Simon, Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter. And we've got more coming up on KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.